it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Wiz and Ashes daily podcast after day three at Headingley. We waited so long for play to start, and then when the rain did relent, we only got one over and we feared that might be that. But after that, the players came back on and England and Australia packed pretty much a whole day's worth of action into one session. England took six wickets, Travis Head played a blinder, and at stumps, England need 224 runs with 10 wickets in hand to peg it back going into Old Trafford. I'm with Jim Wallace to pick through it all. Jim, that last session was quite something, wasn't it?
Yeah, worth the wait, I'd say. I felt for the fans today who were sort of huddled under the gantries or in the stands and the ponchos, and it looked like it was going to be one of those really frustrating days. And we did get on for one over, and then the rain came, and then they went off, but then they were soon back out. And yeah, it was pretty pulsating stuff. England snaring six wickets and Travis Head playing, channeling his inner Ben Stokes, you might say, by smashing sixes, you know, cannily working with the tail to get on strike. And it was one of those sort of cat and mouse periods of play that was really riveting. And then England managed to get him out. There was a genuine sense of relief, I thought, when he was out, because he was, you know, that he could well have taken the game away from England. And, you know, he might well have done that by getting all those runs. But then Crawley and Duckett came out at the end and sort of just got off to a flyer, really, and that sort of gave the English fans in the crowd, I should say, a lift. And so there's sort of a lot of hope heading into tomorrow.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, those tricky little sessions, they talk about them for opening batters, because you do have a chance to score runs, and England are always going to take that chance if it's offered to them, and they have knocked off like a tenth of the total.
Yeah.
And for, you know, okay, there was a review which was not out, and there was a couple of hairy moments, but equally, like, that will have an impact, I guess, come the end of it.
And that's the old thinking, right? So I was on the OBO being like, oh, this is going to be a tricky little session here. You know, it's bowling conditions and all that. And then actually you forget that this England side just come out and they see it as an opportunity to counterpunch. And that's exactly what they did. So yeah, 27 for none is like a real confidence booster for tomorrow.
Yeah, a little disappointed they didn't send out some sort of Nighthawk.
I think he was padded up, right?
Was he?
I think, okay. Well, someone was saying that, yeah.
Broad
yeah.
was, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
okay,
because
there were loads of theories going around. I was hearing people saying like, oh, they should open with Wokes. They should, and then everything makes sense if you do that one completely mad thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's actually, well, we've started, but let's go back to Chris Wokes, who, I mean, he was really good in the first innings, but today he was absolutely brilliant, I thought, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, England, actually, when you, like, you kind of thought that cloud was going to be there for the whole session, and that, you know, there might be a bit of rain here and there, but actually they didn't have that big a window when the clouds were really over, the ball was doing a lot,
yeah,
and they absolutely had to make the most of it, and he was on it right from the start, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the ball was moving, but England started, and I had the old earpiece on, and TMS Agnew and Tufnell on, and they were questioning the tactics, because I think most people, I think they had five people on the boundary when they first started, and everyone was thinking, these are seeming conditions, surely pitch the ball up. But they did that to Head for a little while, and then they brought the fielders up and went fuller. And yeah, Wokes, I mean, he's just class, isn't he? He was hooping it around, he was on the money, he was sort of as in your face as Chris Wokes gets, I guess. He was, you know, you could see that England felt that this was their moment to really get back into this game, into this series, and they sort of had to. And yeah, Wokes was on top form.
Yeah, it's funny, because I actually wondered after the Caribbean tour if he'd played his last test match. I mean, because he was, you know, England obviously left out Anderson and Broad. Wokes was therefore that, you know, the attack leader, had a chance to kind of correct his overseas record, which he pretty much like failed to do on that tour. And you kind of felt that, well, this guy's an own entity. You know what you're going to get from him. But I guess the good thing about that is he's a known entity. You know what you're going to get from him. And in England,
yeah,
has always been someone who's very, very good. I also thought one of the reasons that might have kept him away is he's been, you know, so key in white ball cricket. And that kind of has kept him out of the test reckoning for a bit. But just for a crucial game at home like this, it's like prime Wokes territory. And I don't know, is it even worth talking about what this means for his career? I mean, Anderson, you know, there are always questions about him. You don't want to question him too much, but equally, it's not out of the realms of possibility that we don't see Anderson play again at home after this summer. Do we see Wokes playing a more key role in England's side, or do we think this is just going to be a glorious last hurrah?
I mean, if I was a selector, and I'm not, but I definitely would, and I would have played him at Lords. I know that sounds like hindsight, but I just think he offers with the bat as well, and Josh Tung, you know, he's a promising young bowler and gives you that point of difference, but Wokes bolsters the batting, so a chase like England have tomorrow, you feel a lot more comfortable with Wokes coming in down the order than a couple of the other guys that bowl. And I felt for him when he was left out of the Ireland test, and you know, they put him up for the press, didn't they? And he sort of, you know, he had this sort of boundless energy and a bit of a twinkle in his eye, and I think thought he was going to play, and then it seemed to be miscommunication or whatever, because a couple of hours later England put the side up and he wasn't in it, and then I saw him doing 12 man duties as well, so it's like, you know, even though he's a bit of an old timer now, he doesn't get to avoid that. So if you're around the squad, you're still carrying drinks, you're still doing sub fielding duties and all that stuff, so it was really nice to see him back and in the wickets, and you know, he's not lost any pace or anything like that. He's not lost any accuracy, so I mean, yeah, he's definitely in contention to get back in the side regularly, I think.
Yeah, and I think even if not, it's just, it's great that, like, if this were to be the way, you know, England end up going a different way for India, whatever it might be, it's just nice that he's had this moment rather than that kind of tame peaching out of a series that England didn't really want to be playing, that was, you know, such bad vibes in the Caribbean. I mean, he deserves something better than that, and it's good that he's got it, I
guess. But sport often doesn't give you that, right?
Exactly,
And that's might be the case with Anderson. Like, you know, if it could be the case that we might have seen his last Test match, because, you know, they don't owe him a swan song, and sport doesn't often work like that. You're lucky if you get a sort of Alistair Cook farewell or whatever. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, Wokes has got back in, I guess, and his performance sort of makes him hard to drop for the next game. But you know, obviously they don't mention that, they don't say drop anymore, do they? Everyone's rested and rotated, but yeah, he's certainly done well here.
Yeah, you mentioned the tactics stuff earlier. Do you think England got it right? I mean, Australia were 139 for six. The two wickets that came were from Wokes, and they were proper batters, and they came from traditional seam bowling, right? Like him challenging the edge. They weren't sure whether to play or leave. Like literally that was the issue. And then they end up with 224, which from there looks like a pretty decent score. And Travis Head obviously plays a blinder, and we'll get to him. But England also basically stopped bowling normally at that point, right? They stopped trying to get Travis Head pretty much altogether, and they went short of the rest of them, which and also that has worked at times. So I'm not actually saying right now it's definitely wrong. I just want to hear what you think about it, basically.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. Well, I think the wicket, the Marsh wicket and the Carey wicket, actually they're undone by a bit of indecision, but also Glenn McGrath was saying on the radio as well, a bit of steepling bounce.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And didn't quite get withdraw the bat or whatever, and they both chopped on, and Mitch Marsh, did he glove behind?
I can't remember. They both left basically, but it came up and hit them on the glove, which is that's the bounce, isn't it? Yeah.
So I guess you know, England got to give them credit for extracting that from the pitch, and they weren't sort of really full balls that they nicked him off with. It's always a bit puzzling when you see you know, a sort of really spread field with everyone on the boundary and the likes of someone like Wokes, who's such a natural swing bowler, pitching it up, banging it into the middle of the surface. And it looks even stranger when someone like Travis Head is then hooking it for six. I guess, you know, you allow the batter the chance if he's in, and he was in. They let him get in, I guess. You know, they didn't get him early. And if you don't get him early, then if you bowl short, then it allows the batter the chance to get under it and get it away, and he was doing that, and he was looking pretty dicey for England for a while there.
I guess the other thing as well is that, like, you're never going to know what the other way would have done, but like it maybe is quite optimistic to suggest if England had bowled normally ahead, they just would have got him out. I mean, he was already pretty set at that point. He averages, you know, nearly 50 in Test cricket at this point, and he does that for a reason, and that's a lot, because when he gets in, he cashes in.
And also when they did pitch it up, he smacked him through the covers.
Yeah, true,
you know, he looked pretty brutal on stuff that was fall, even from Wood, who was pinging it down at 90 miles an hour. So yeah, they were glad to get him. There was a top edge from Broad in the end, wasn't it? And yeah, I mean, I said earlier in the day that I wouldn't fancy chasing more than 260 in this match, because I think there's definitely something in the pitch, and Australia have got such good bowlers. England also, I think, have lost a little bit of that sheen of confidence that they've had in chasing in the course of this series. And, you know, they keep relying on Ben Stokes to do sort of miracle work. It'd be nice if, you know, someone else like Harry Brooke or whatever stood up tomorrow and just got like a really nice, calm 80 and saw England home by around tea time. But again, something nagging away thinks it's probably there's another sort of lurch one way and then the other tomorrow if the weather holds.
Yeah, I think it's worth dwelling slightly more just on Travis Head because
I took away from Travis there.
No. That the question was about the tactics. That's fine.
Okay.
But just on Head, I mean, I know he hasn't got he obviously made that brilliant 100 in the World Championship final.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a statement knock this series, but he's got two kind of. Was it? He got 77 today, didn't he? Exactly. Yeah. So he's got two kind of 77s in quite different circumstances. One was like looked like taking the game away from England at Lords on day one. One keeping Australia in the game today. Also got a 50 in the first innings at Edgbaston. And there were questions over him because he just hadn't done it in England before this tour. And he's kind of gone a reasonable way to answering those. And then actually at that point you're like, actually, what more questions does he have to answer? Like he can play the pace bowling. He played spin pretty well in India after being left out for that first test.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's 29, he's right in his prime.
Yeah.
He could have a pretty special few years ahead of him, couldn't he?
Yeah. He's definitely, he's got that ability to go to the gears as well. I mentioned Stokes earlier. He's got that. And obviously he's canny enough to be able to bat his way with the lower order and manipulate the strike. And, you know, he has all the shots as well. I thought, because he shaved his tash off heading into this game, I thought maybe that's a sign of like, you know, something's happening in his head. You know, like a loss of confidence or whatever, you change it up, you know, you get a different hairdo, you get a bit, well, I shouldn't mention hairdos today.
Well, but
like,
you just tweaked something. He shaved his tash. Do we know that he did it himself or did he get it?
Oh, maybe.
Did he get a wet shave from a barber?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe he did, yeah. And then ran out without paying. Yeah,
30 quid for a moustache coming off is that's pretty steep.
I wouldn't know, you know, I sort of just do my own few that are sprouting.
But yeah, anyway, Travis Head, good. I guess also the other thing about him as well is that, like, I don't know if he's officially the vice captain right now. I'm not sure if they've actually named one, but being that and being the most established batter in the Australia team is quite a good thing to be at the moment because Cummins won't be able to play every test match. So he's going to be able to, you know, lead his country in some games, possibly if he keeps it up.
Lots
to come from him, I guess.
Yep.
I guess finally then, just predictions for the chase tomorrow. It is so beautifully set up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on a knife edge. I try not to be too sort of one way or the other, but this test I really wanted England to win. It's like that old fandom coming back in. It's the good of the game, you know, because you really want it to go to Old Trafford 2-1 and then potentially the Oval 2-all. I think there's going to be a few twists. I think England are going to do this one. I think they looked confident tonight. I think it'll come back to them, those memories. The weather's not supposed to be so bad. I think if they get a good couple of hours of sunshine or whatever, then they'll break the back of the chase and, you know, they won't hopefully have to rely on Ben Stokes to sort of do something otherworldly to get them over the line. But I don't want to put a number on it, but I think England will do it.
I reckon England by 3 wickets, I think. Just shades of 2005.
Yeah.
Trent Bridge.
Okay, I'm going to go England by 5 wickets.
Fine, okay, yeah. But maybe with a big last partnership, so it's a bit hairy, like five down with 100 to win and then closing home. Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
And if people do want just a few good Headingley stats in chases, Katia Whitney picked out a couple of good ones for the website. So it's got the best fourth innings batting average of any ground in England since 2010. Leicester chased nearly 400 earlier this year against Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Yorkshire also made more than 400 in the fourth innings to get to a draw. And the last 3 test chases, England obviously cruised to nearly 300 against New Zealand last year. Before that was 359, was it, chased down by Ben Stokes?
Mm-hmm.
And then before that was the Shy Hope game where they chased
300
and a bit heading as well. So it is a good ground for batting last on. It doesn't break up too much. Obviously, this is only going to be a day 4 pitch and with only, you know, 2.5 days play on it so far.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be too many demons in the surface. But as I say, it's never been simple in this series. And,
and the outfield, just to jump in, is lightning fast. So you get it through the infield and it is 4. It's really fast. It's a hard play. You saw it with England there and you saw it with Stokes and Wood after lunch, yesterday. Once the boundaries start coming, it's a really hard place to control the run rate, I think. So again, that's in England's favour. If they get off to a bit of a flyer, then all the England fans will sort of calm down and be like, oh, this is quite enjoyable. But part of me thinks that that might not be as straightforward as that. But
yeah, bit of rain around too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it promised to be dramatic whatever happens. So please do join us tomorrow for what is likely to be the last time this test match. Cheers.
Podcast Network.